And while my presentation is loading, this is actually a follow-up to a talk that I gave here last year where I actually looked at the relationship between state laws governing snack foods and beverages in elementary schools. This one now is focused on the secondary school area, which in many ways is a lot more interesting to me because, as you'll see in a minute, a lot of these things are very ubiquitous at the secondary school level, more so than even at the elementary school level. I, like my prior presenters, have no financial conflicts of interest to disclose at this point in time relative to this presentation. And actually, before I get all the way through, just in case one of my co-authors has to leave early, I just want to give a big shout-out and acknowledgement to Yvonne Terry McElrath, who's sitting here in the audience, who's from the University of Michigan, because she was the one responsible for weaving through all these data and running these analyses for today. So thank you, Yvonne. I'm going to talk a little bit about the availability of high-fat milks and sugary drinks in secondary schools and describe the state law environment relative to policies in this area, look at the relationship between these laws and secondary school beverage availability, and then talk about the implications for what most of you probably know, the forthcoming implementation of the USDA standards governing what they call competitive foods or snack foods and beverages in schools outside of the meal programs. So these are a little bit different than the school meal standards. These are ones specifically focused on these things sold or served outside of the meal programs. So what do we know about the availability? And these data are actually from the Youth Education Society survey that's conducted at the University of Michigan. And these are from school year 2011 and 12. And what we see here is that sugary drinks and high-fat milks are more readily available in high schools than they are in the middle schools, as you can see here. And the y-axis on all of these slides for the school-level data are representative of the percentage of students with any availability of these things. So here, about 85% or so of all students in high schools in a nationally representative sample of secondary schools have access to sugar-sweetened beverages in their high school, and about 65% of middle school students do. Regular soda availability is a lot less. So part of that is because the USDA standards up until these new standards kick in prohibited the sale of carbonated beverages and certain other candies in competition with the school meal programs. And so a la carte offerings of regular soda have always been prohibited. We see a lot less of it being sold. Plus, you had the voluntary agreements with the beverage industry and where they've removed sodas from many schools across the country. The other SSBs, the other sugar-sweetened beverages, includes things like sports drinks, sweetened teas, energy drinks, less than 100% juice drinks, things like that. So they're a lot more ubiquitous than regular soda. And 2% are whole milk. The higher fat milks are also, about a little over a third at the high school level, and about a little less than a third have access to that in the middle school level. In terms of policies in these areas, it's really interesting because you'll recall here, so SSBs are the most widely available at the middle and high school levels. Sodas, less so, and whole fat and 2% milks in between. When you look at the policies, though, there are very few state laws that actually govern the broader category of sugar-sweetened beverages. And these are data from school year 2008-09 through 2011-12 over time by grade level. And what you can see here is that for the middle school level, the policies are pretty consistent. About five states from 2008-09 through 10-11 regulated in vending machines and school stores, SSBs, and a few more states kicked in 2011-12. Very few states, only two states, regulated or prohibited the sale of SSBs in vending machines and stores at the high school level, and at the a la carte level, there were about three by the time we got to 11-12. However, when you get to soda, you see the flip. So you see the flip from the actual data itself. The data itself in terms of availability show that SSBs are much more available. Sodas are less available. But the policies are directed at the sodas, and they're not directed at the SSBs. So you have a complete disconnect between availability and what the policies are actually regulating. So you can see here, most of the policies are specifically focused on prohibiting sodas and not other SSBs at the middle school level and less so at the high school level. And then milks, a lot less states are prohibiting the sale of 2% or whole milk in their state laws. So we wanted to look at the relationship between these laws and the availability of soda and high-fat milks, and actually also SSBs. So the data on the school level are coming from two sources. The Health Policies and Practices schools are from the Youth Education Society schools. And it's a nationally representative annual survey of school administrators in about 550 secondary schools across the country. There are about 280 eighth grade schools, 135 10th grade, and 135 12th grade schools. And each school participates up to about 3 years. They're surveyed annually. And then we have the Monitoring the Future schools, which are nationally representative annual surveys of school administrators and schools completing their second and final year participation in the MTF study of 8th, 10th, and 12th grade student surveys, about 210 public and private secondary schools. And the administrators are surveyed only once. And I think I actually just flipped. These are the yes schools in the second bullet. Sorry about that, Yvonne. And the data for this analysis are from each year, springs of 2009, 10, 11, and 12. The school level outcomes that we looked at were a la carte cafeteria sales, school snack food and store or snack bar and cart sales, vending machine sales, and actually I didn't include in this presentation any competitive venue. And then the outcomes were specifically on availability of any of the following, or no availability of any of the following beverages: regular soda, so regular soft drinks such as Coke, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, whatever, non-soda SSBs, so that would be your sports drinks, energy drinks, isotonics, sweetened teas, things like that, and then other milks are essentially 2% or whole milks. The state law data, I oversee that work under Bridging the Gap, and we compile nationwide data across all 50 states in the District of Columbia using primary legal research using Westlaw and Lexis, where we actually compile codified state statutory laws and administrative laws, which are essentially regulations. For all 50 states in D.C., we look at the laws effective as of the beginning of each school year, using as a proxy the day after Labor Day of each school year as the first day of the school year. And then we looked at, for this particular analysis, we looked at the extent to which the laws banned any of the following beverages at each grade level, middle and high school. So we looked at bans on regular soda for sale in middle and high schools, bans on other SSBs, and then bans on high-fat milks. We combined the data from the school surveys. We linked them with the state law data using state FIPS codes, Federal Information Processing Standards. And then all the analyses were conducted in STATA using GLAM, which is Generalized Linear Latent and Mixed Models, allowing for random intercepts at both the school and state levels. And we clustered on state level as well. And we had a number of controls at the state and school levels. And then the results were weighted such that they represent the national percentage of students enrolled in secondary schools with specified state and school level characteristics. So this is just descriptive information on the sample of students in the schools, sample of schools included. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through this, but you can see we have decent representation across the country. We have the differences are slightly different between middle and high schools. The percentage of white of the state population was almost identical. Rural population and urbanicity is similar. Obviously, we have more schools with larger number of students at the high school level than the middle school level, and that's just the nature of school sizes at those levels. But we have fairly equal representation across grade levels in terms of urbanicity and region and things like that. So what did we find? All the data that I'm presenting are from adjusted multivariate GLAM models. So I presented the adjusted prevalence estimates for you. So these have all controlled for all those school and state level characteristics. And I've included on the bottom here the range of numbers of students that are included in each of these samples. For soda availability, you'll remember soda was the most highly regulated beverage of the three beverages we looked at. And what we can see here, the brown bar is not having a ban, and the blue bar is having a ban. Ban meaning state law prohibits it. And what you can see there, middle school students and high school students are more likely to report the availability of regular soda and vending machines if they're in a state that does not ban their availability. Whereas students in states that ban their availability, the blue bars for vending machines, species are less likely to report soda being available. And we saw the same thing with stores at the high school level. We didn't see anything on a la carte, but as I mentioned, a la carte really is not very commonly regulated, partly because the USDA standards that led up to the current standards prohibiting the sale of sodas in a la carte lines. When we look at non-soda SSB availability, here we see, and remember, this is what's fascinating to me about this whole thing, is that SSBs are hardly regulated at the secondary level. So the fact that we actually found anything in this particular slide surprised me to begin with, because what it's saying here is that the few states are actually doing something, they're actually starting to make enough of a difference to actually start to see something meaningful. So it actually holds promise for what we might see with the new USDA standards. And so you can see across the board here, you see differences in availability in banned states versus non-banned states. Statistically, once we control for everything, the only place where we really see any statistically different effect is with school stores at the high school level, although we approach significance with vending machines at the middle school level. And when we get to the a la carte other milk, 2% in whole milks, we see statistically significant differences with a la carte at the middle school level and school stores, again, at the high school level. What's interesting about the store thing, and I keep wondering to myself why that keeps popping up, and part of it may be that there are certain states that are including specific provisions for stores along with a la carte and vending machines, where in other parts of the country, they don't regulate stores at all. So the ones that are actually regulating stores, they're actually seeing some meaningful differences in what's actually being sold. So it's a compliance and implementation issue. So where do we take away from all this? For those of you who are not familiar, as part of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, it gave the USDA the authority for the first time to really regulate the sale of foods and beverages sold outside of meal programs. And so USDA issued on June 28, 2013, they issued an interim final rule, and the public comment period in that interim final rule, I think, just closed, and they're expected to release the final rule in the coming months with implementation scheduled to begin in school year 2014-15. But there are a number of beverage components in that rule, and I've listed here some of them, and there are more on this next slide here. The other thing I should also note, which I accidentally put in my speaker notes and not on the slide itself, was that at the high school level, beverages of no more than 40 calories per 8 ounces or 60 calories per 12 ounces and no more than 12-ounce servings are also allowed. So that would include low-cal isotonics, and low-cal sweetened teas and things like that, low-cal energy drinks as well. But what's really interesting about these standards is they really are the first national standards that we have governing beverage availability at the secondary school level outside of meal programs. And given the slide that I showed you earlier relative to the state laws being much stronger at the sorry, I don't have that slide to show you guys, but my data basically show you that state laws are much stronger at the elementary level than they are at the middle and high school levels. And so this will provide the first time a national baseline of standards at the secondary school levels, which clearly you can see from the state law data we don't have right now. So what are some takeaways from this? What we have seen and what's encouraging is that strong policies bans on certain beverages can reduce availability in secondary schools, which is really encouraging. It suggests that there's some progress that can be made in this area. What the data also show, though, are that the laws alone are not enough to ensure 100% compliance. And so we need to do a lot more than just having a law in the books. And I'm a policy wonk, so I'm actually one of the few people in this room, maybe Hannah and a few others in this room, who actually read through all the public comments that were submitted in response to the USDA proposed rule. But if you read through those comments, you would actually see that the biggest challenges that were identified in submission of those comments relate to implementation challenges and compliance. And so a key challenge for USDA going forward will be on the implementation side. And so I've got here a couple of strategies where I think compliance will be particularly challenging. The last one being most notable because the USDA standards are silent on the fundraising issue. And what I'm very concerned about as a public health person is a lot of schools are going to start to turn their vending machines into fundraisers. And will there be a loophole that will enable them to get around this fundraising limitation? And so that's something we're going to have to monitor going forward. We are currently, Yvonne's actually working on this right now, linking these data with student level consumption, and we've actually looked at it for specific subpopulation of African American high school students, and Yvonne will be submitting that data for publication very soon. We're also looking at relationships with district policies. I have the largest ongoing nationwide evaluation of district data in this area. And then ideally, we're going to look at the common impact of both state laws, district policies, and the USDA standards on school beverage availability and student beverage consumption going forward. So I already acknowledge Yvonne, but I'd like to acknowledge her again, along with Lloyd Johnston and Patrick O'Malley from the University of Michigan, Frank Chalupka from the University of Illinois Chicago, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and NIDA, actually, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, helped to fund these studies. Here's our website. I encourage you to sign up for our email list if you want more information on Bridging the Gap. We'll have our survey information and publications up there, and we have a Twitter handle as well, so you're welcome to follow us, and I encourage you to do so. Thank you. Any questions? That was so clear that nobody has a question. Hi. So I'm not a dietitian, so I don't know if others on the panel want to tackle that question. I can tell you, having been on two IOM panels now and a lot of my work in this area, you know, the standards are all focused on reducing what Elizabeth was talking about, which is reducing access to solid fats and added sugars. The USDA competitive food rule, the state standards are all focusing on that. And so, in essence, what you're doing is trying to reduce caloric intake from solid fats and added sugars. I'll let Sandra and maybe some others weigh in on kind of what's better from a nutrition standpoint. So, Yvonne, go ahead. Yeah, they're not analyzed here.
Sure, so yeah. Milk.
Right.
You know, like kids that are in school can go and they can have Nutrix with chocolate milk in the morning every day.
Right.
You know, and but they can't have whole milk, and it just seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
Since you do policy.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think we have a real policy. The big policy opportunity on milk is on the flavored milk issue, because very few policies specifically restrict flavored milk. They restrict on fat. They don't restrict on sugars. and the IOM, in their 2007 report on nutrition standards in school foods, which actually preceded the new USDA standards that will be coming out, they specifically talked about the sugar content in milk, and the USDA standards will start to pick up on some of that too. Most of the state laws are pretty silent on the issue because of the political nature of it. It's sort of like on the food side, nobody wants to touch the cupcakes and nobody wants to touch the parties and things like that. Flavored milk is another hot button issue for parents in particular. Yeah, at least they're getting some nutrient out of it, but, yeah. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Otherwise, I'll turn it back over. Thanks very much.